This is Hot Shot Archery's Outdoor Podcast.
The show starts in 3, 2, 1, go.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Hot Shot Archery's Outdoor Podcast. I am Logan Chartrand. Robin Parks, what's on your mind this week?
Hey, Logan and everybody out there. Deer hunting is still on my mind. It's been practically every day for what seems like forever now, but I guess it's been about a month. And I'm still at it pretty hard. I'm kind of getting into half-day hunts, half-day work now, but still looking for buck number two.
Yeah, you've been, you really have still been hitting it hard. And I feel like I kind of hit a point where I'll probably still bow hunt a little bit. I don't know how hard I'm going to go at it. But I mean, like you mentioned, going hard every day, had a bunch of all day sits, now kind of blending it. And you're hunting in, I guess, for people wherever in the world, so close enough, and you're hunting kind of in the St. Louis area. What have you been seeing in all of this time? How has it changed for you over the last week or so?
I think over the last week, it's really gotten to be a little bit more back towards a traditional, you know, early morning activity, and then again, late evening or afternoon, I should say, activity, and far less activity in the middle parts of the day. And that's been, I'm going to say, just right about the last week that I've really noticed that not just midday, but even the really late morning activity, which had been really good for me, you know, like 10 days ago, that's really kind of tailed off. And so I think I'm back to more of the, you know, few hours in the morning and few hours in the evening kind of hunts. And not that I'm against trying to sit later in the mornings or earlier in the afternoons, but until I start seeing some activity pop up on the cameras, I think I'm pretty much abandoning that midday stuff.
Yeah, it seems like it's getting to that time of year, and we're sitting here talking. So this it's the 23rd. This podcast is going to come out on November 24th, tomorrow morning. You had mentioned like 10 days ago. It's weird for me to think that 10 days ago was like the heart of things. You're talking November 13th, getting into the 14th. I mean, that was kind of the time where, at least on our property, we saw it ripping. And it's weird to think that was already 10 days ago. And for people that probably aren't as like crazy into deer hunting, how much changes in just 10 days in the deer world?
Yeah, especially this time of year. And I think that this isn't my theory. I don't want to take credit for it. I've actually read up a little bit from some other people that know much more about deer hunting and buck activity than I do. But the theory is, and it makes sense, that at this point in time, that bucks are ready for a break. They're just wore out, and they've been going at it, you know, hard for a month or more, and they've just about had it. And of course, there's less and less does going to be available for breeding now. And that might pick up here. You know, the first week in December is usually when I see a little bit of a spike in activity that's really related to bucks chasing does again. But I think right now bucks are trying to get a little rest in, really, just kind of like some of us that's been hunting a lot, actually.
Oh, yeah. Every once in a while, you got to have a little time off. I mean, hell, even during my rutcation, there was one day I woke up not feeling so great, and I was like, this is the day I'm staying in the morning. I'm glad that you had mentioned that, because I was questioning over the last couple of days, I've started getting some pictures of what I would say are some pretty nice bucks, but they look so skinny, like their bodies have almost gotten to that point over the last few weeks where they've just been run so ragged that they are really looking skinny right now and not at all how they were looking, you know, even just 3 weeks ago, that end of October, getting into the first week of November, they've really lost a lot of their body weight with all the running and chasing they've been doing. I haven't seen a ton of it in person, but the deer are showing all the signs of having gone nonstop these last several weeks.
Yeah, of course. And I'm like you, I didn't really witness all that much chasing, or even, you know, bucks right on does tails this season. It's been just not great for me to see a lot of that. But we all know it doesn't matter if we see it or not. It has to be happening because deer are going to breed. And you probably saw it, and others of our listeners that follow me on social media probably saw just a couple nights ago, I posted a picture of a nice buck with his nose right in a doe's butt. And so that's obviously is still happening a little bit, but, I mean, you know, let's face it, bucks have been chasing tail for a while now, and I'm sure it wears on them. And when food's not most important on their mind, but covering ground and looking for companionship is, they're going to lose some weight for sure.
Yeah, they've certainly been shedding it. In fact, I just went today and ordered like 40 more pounds of mineral to try to get out here, you know, that we're a month from Christmas. Like tomorrow is a month from Christmas Eve. It's so crazy to think that. I want to be able to get some feed and some mineral out pretty much as soon as we're done hunting, once we wrap things up. Just to give them every little edge. I mean, they just took out 30 or 40 acres of corn in the last week. I think sometime over last weekend, they got corn out just across a pasture from us. So, I mean, there's food in the area, but I want to, now that I mentioned at the beginning, I'm mostly done. I might do a little bow hunting. I had a very successful opening day of Missouri's firearms season. But I think, like, as soon as we're done hunting, I want to turn the property back into as much of a sanctuary that has everything they need. And even though it's only 70 acres, I want to keep them as close as possible and give them everything they need to recharge those batteries.
Yeah, that's a good point. And some of the areas or properties that I hunt, we do the same. Once we're done hunting, we start feeding. That we can't do that on every property that we have. Some of our properties are in CWD or no feed areas, so we're not able to do it everywhere, but we do like to do it on places in which we can, and once we're done hunting. So we're a ways off from what I guess we would call late season. I mean, there's still some good hunting to be had. And like you mentioned, you shot a really nice buck, and I'm sure that kind of tempers your excitement a little bit and gives you a feeling of satisfaction. And I'm lucky that also, you know, some of the properties that I have in Missouri, but especially over in Illinois, the hunting from Thanksgiving weekend through Christmas can be really, really good. And so, just knowing that kind of keeps my fire going, you know, up until, yeah, I'm either just totally burnt out or get lucky enough to fill my buck tags.
Yeah. I have a few issues. The first being, we busted our asses Saturday, me, my wife, and my mom, processing and packaging, deboning, cutting into subprimals, working out the burger meat and different things. Jack's deer and my deer. So that was a hell of a day while Jack and my dad were out deer hunting, making memories and having an awesome time. And not that we weren't. I mean, it's a tradition. It's one of those things that it's kind of like hunting. I love to do it, but it can be a lot of work to do. So we busted our asses Saturday to do that. Now, both my chest deep freeze and the freezer in my garage beer fridge are totally packed with deer meat. And I really don't want another taxidermy bill this year. Like, so I got just like all these things are thinking, okay, Logan, so maybe let's see where some of this deer meat. I wanted a bunch of steak cuts this year. I was like, let's see where that plays out. Can't say that I would turn down an opportunity. We still have some patches of radishes, and I know my dad's got his tags left to fill, and I'd much rather he get one than I do, but we've got some winter stuff in at the farm for getting into mid, late December, that very end part in January. And we've had some deer coming through, but I don't know where I would put it. And if the only way I would shoot an antler deer is if it were a really nice mature deer. And I mean, my taxidermist is like super cheap compared to most people. Like, it's still $500 for a shoulder mount. I'm like, I don't have another $500 to come up with, and I sure as hell don't have the wall space right now for it.
Yeah, I understand that. The buck that I shot in early November, he went to Dave Schumacher in the St. Louis area. He's got some beetles. And I elected to do that instead of a shoulder mount, and it's same kind of thinking as you. Like, do I really want another taxidermy bill? It's not a giant, super nice deer. He is a super nice deer, but not a giant is what I mean. And, you know, wall space is getting to be at a premium in my house. And so, European mount it was. Now, I'm a little different than you. I've got plenty of freezer space still. I've killed two, a doe and a buck. And I really like to be at about that five deer mark as far as meat for the year. So I've got some deer to kill still. And in fact, even tomorrow morning, if I get a chip shot at a doe, I'll be taking that because my management hunt that I'm on now, I get a couple antler that's only tags, only one of which I filled. So I'm kind of getting back into that groove of if good chance that a doe comes along, I'm going to be taking that and not just buck hunting anymore.
Yeah. Oh, there were certainly a couple times where I saw some does and I'm like, I can't really guarantee that you're going to be safe coming through here. Even when Jack got his deer Saturday morning, we were sitting around and there was a nice doe that came in with another couple young deer. And I was about to let Jack turn loose on that one until a buck came in, and I don't know what happened. The buck kind of bounced off to the side. I don't know. He didn't look like he saw anything. Maybe he had scent checked the doe already and was just cutting across over, kind of heading towards where we've got some turnips. But I told Jack, I'm like, don't shoot that doe. That buck's going to come back through here. Of course, that buck did not come back through there. I'm not right all the time. I guess I'm at 99.9 now. But that was really the only reason that neither he nor I shot the big doe. And I'll be honest, there was a lot of luck that came into me shooting my buck. I mean, we were standing there. He was filming a little button buck that was feeding within 10 yards of the blind, hanging out. And you know, all of a sudden he saw the buck coming up out of the draw and heading past the blind. He's like, oh, Dad, there's some deer. Oh, that's a big buck. And he kind of looks at me. He's got my Canon G20 in his both hands. His shotgun's down against the wall of the blind. His red dot scope was turned off on it. And I was like, buddy, I looked out and I saw the size of the tines on this deer. I was like, you got to scoot back. We had everything went down in probably like 5 seconds from him seeing the deer to me shooting the deer. And I had gone in too. I was hunting one particular 10 pointer. And for the longest time, I think, in fact, when he was filming the recovery for me. I think I even talked about this is that 10 pointer that I've been going after. Ended up not being that particular deer, but that was total luck. That deer just happened to be cruising through. I don't have any pictures of it. And there was no like real skill, but I was thinking European mount. And then when we saw the deer, I was like, I don't know how I don't do a shoulder mount. I think Jack may have even asked me when we walked up and its rack was all tangled in the fence. It's like, Dad, are you going to mount this? And I think I looked at it and I was like, I don't know how I can't, man. Like, I owe it, and as much as I have wanted a wall pedestal mount, like, I owed it to this deer. I am, as I look around at my other bucks on the wall, I mean, I have to imagine that there's no way that this deer won't be my best deer. I mean, I didn't measure it. I didn't put a tape on any part of it. I caped it out Sunday morning, got it to the taxidermist Sunday afternoon, the day after I shot. So I'll have no idea until like May or June, but I cannot look. He's just got such heavy mass, such a widespread, such long tines. It's got to be my best buck to date. So I figure that's worth doing the shoulder mount. I'll find somewhere, some way, somehow to get him on a wall, but it was worth showing off the whole deer as much as possible. But from here on out, I'm going to have to strongly consider switching over to European mounts.
Yeah, I'm kind of pushing myself hard to do kind of what you're doing, where I'm not going to shoulder mount another one unless it is either my, you know, my biggest or close to it. But I don't know. I sure like to look at the mounts, and the deer that I shot last year about this time of year was far from my biggest, but I had a lot of history with him, and we had a lot of pictures going back to summer, and we had seen him several times between myself and Eric Gregory. And just because of all that, I decided to go ahead and get it mounted, and I sure didn't regret that looking at him now. But
yeah, the memories I hear a lot into it.
Yeah, definitely. And so I don't know. I get what you're saying. I'm trying to hold myself to that. I did good with that early November buck getting him European mounted, but I will say the guy sent me a picture of the skull on a plaque, and I was kind of like, oof, I probably should have mounted that deer.
It's like, so, now that I see him, dang.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the good news is something like that, you can always go, I guess even if you do a shoulder mount, you could always switch over to like one of those skull things, but you're in a better situation where if you really decided at some point in time, you could have them put it on a form and get a cape for it and stuff. But
yeah,
now you're looking at, definitely. Hell, I paid as much. I should have just done the shoulder mount the first time.
Yeah. European skull mounts, they look pretty cool too, though, once they're up and on the wall or on a desk or pedestal, depending on how you get them or how you're wanting to display it. But they do look good too.
Oh, yeah. I've certainly seen some nice ones. And I think doing them professionally is absolutely the way to go. I've tried to do them myself. I've seen some other DIY stuff. If I were going to do it, I would definitely be sending it to somebody. I mean, I know some folks who do really nice jobs. There was a lady who did Jack's first deer, which was a button buck, and it was not very expensive. I'm like, you did all of that for what took me like the better part of a day, a bunch of stinking, a ruined stainless steel crock pot to try to do. And then I still got it wrong on one of my bucks. So it's, they're not bad. But like you, I think if it's my biggest, and if I have smaller deer shoulder mounted, I'm probably going to do it. But I'm also at this point where I'm like, okay, it's going to have to be real big. I'm still a mature deer person over antlers, but probably not the rest of this year, at least where I'm deer hunting for our farm. It just doesn't kind of match that philosophy, but this deer was everything I was looking for. We've talked about it before, that deer that just excites you. There's something, like you had mentioned, the deer last year, and some of those memories. I knew, you know, we've talked, I was not hunting for a deer. I was kind of hunting the deer. And when I saw it, it was the deer. I mean, I immediately knew, unlike any of the other bucks that I've seen so far this year, where I was like, okay, that's a buck. It's not the buck. Let's just watch. Let's get footage. This was, it was just instant. And that's, I can't tell you. I mean, we've talked about it. I couldn't even tell you how many times about just looking for that thing that excites you right away, regardless of how big the deer may be. I mean, I honestly did not know that the deer was as big as it was when I shot. I knew that it had at least four on one side, if not five. And I thought it had five because I figured the brow tine. And when I saw five on one side, I immediately went to, and they were really tall. Like, it's got to be that 10 pointer. I am for this. I didn't need a bunch of time to think about, should I pass? Should I shoot? And I feel like as much as we do that, we should feel really good about those times where we say, you know, I'm going to pass, because I'm starting to realize if I have to ask myself, I'm probably more likely to try to talk myself into shooting a deer that I didn't really maybe want to up front. But this one was, yeah, I wanted to shoot it from the moment that I would have loved for Jack to be able to get this deer, but I knew one of us needed to shoot that deer instantly.
Yeah, that's a pretty good rule of thumb. I think if you have to have a debate in your head, if it's big enough to shoot, then you're probably going to be disappointed if you shoot it. And trust me, I've been there more than once. Deer that I'm like, I'm not sure. Yeah, it's big enough. Yeah, I'm going to shoot him. And it just typically ends up being your first thought about that deer is the correct one. And so if you're really trying to hold off for a bigger deer or a mature deer, I think you hit it right on the head. You know, if you get excited and you don't have to talk yourself into shooting it, it's probably the right deer to shoot.
Yeah, but that's a tough thing to do. I mean, hell, how I've been hunting for 25, I mean, since I turned 40 this year, and probably since I was like 12 or 13. So a long time. And I'm just now getting to that point in these last couple of years where I probably a combination of being very fortunate to have taken some nice deer, being fortunate to have had a chance to see some nice deer. And I think that plays into it too. When you're sitting in the stand and you see, you know, a 2.5, even maybe a 3.5-year-old 8-pointer or something like that, where it's like, okay, so that, yeah, or a young, I've seen a lot of young 7s. We've got a young 9-pointer that I haven't personally laid eyes on yet this year, but I think that has helped too. It's hard. I wish everybody could just kind of pull from us and be like, oh, okay, if these two are saying, hey, do this, maybe. But I could also appreciate those folks who they're still trying to figure it out on their own. And that's why, shoot what makes you happy. How many does have we posted pictures of on, you know, the company Facebook and Instagram pages, you know, people that are happy with what they've taken. I'm all for it. I just knew that, said we've talked about it ad nauseum, but I knew this year that what I was going to be happy with was a mature, big, tall rack deer, and I got it. It wasn't the one that, like I said, that I thought it was, but I am just as happy. It's a little bit of a bummer to not have those back pictures on the trail cameras to go back and say, yeah, I saw this deer. I've been following it since June, July, August, but I am definitely not going to sit here and complain that I don't have trail camera pictures of that deer.
No, in fact, that's really part of the magic in November, isn't it? That you just never know. I mean, even though no matter how much time you spend trying to learn the deer in your area and take inventory, so to speak, like you just never know when this deer that you've never seen, and it could just be an absolute giant just walks by. And that's really what kind of drives me, you know, to hunt, and especially November, like every chance I can, because you just never know. And that buck that I shot is the same way. I thought very similar to you when I shot it. I really thought that it was a deer that we had named Curly. And in fact, so much so that even after I trailed the deer and went and found him, I was by myself. It took just a couple quick photos, and then left to get help. Like, I texted everybody and said, it's Curly. And it wasn't until after, like, we got him out of the woods that we all realized it wasn't Curly. He was very similar, but I don't think that we have any pictures of this deer at all. And it's cool and all to kill a deer that you've been after and you've put on the quote-unquote hit list or, you know, target buck list, whatever you call it. And that's neat, but trust me, I'm just as happy like you to kill a deer. You know, this buck that I killed and he came over the hill, one glance with the binocs, and I knew I was going to try to shoot him if I could. And it's just that immediate recognition of, yeah, this one, you know. And I know you know exactly what I'm talking about, because that's what you described whenever you and Jack seen that buck coming.
Almost the exact same situation. We climbed down, and I was super tight-lipped about it. I didn't even text you until we had already recovered, hands were on it, had some pictures already taken just on my cell phone. But we got down, saw the deer. It was laying with its left side down, on its side. Its right side was up and caught in the fence. Its left side was down and kind of covered in some leaves. And the first person I actually text anything about, I didn't even say anything to my wife. I think I shot, and within a minute, she texted that she was getting dinner ready back at camp. And I didn't even say anything about having shot a deer or at a deer. I mean, like, Jack's trying to high five me or give me knuckles in the blind. And I'm like, buddy, let's play it off. Let's be cool. Not until anything. But when I walked up and saw that deer, I texted my dad and just said, Dad, I got him. And him being that 10 point, I mean, I just thought for sure. And then as we lifted it up, I'm like, where did this kicker come from? I've got some pictures of this deer with his head up in a scrape, licking the licking branch, and there's no kicker on this left side. And it, so, I mean, again, the exact same deal where thought it was one deer so much in my mind. And then until we started kind of doing more with it, it's like, oh, I don't think this is that deer. So hopefully that Big Ten is still out there running around. I know I got a picture of him late Sunday of opening weekend. Haven't seen him since, but I know that the neighbors to the west of us that do quite a bit of hunting, he got a really nice 8, and his grandson is the only other one who hunts over there. He got a fork horn or something, he said, during youth season. So they're, other than archery, they're definitely bucked out. Hopefully that deer will make it all the way through the year, and I can only imagine what he might look like next year.
Right. It's kind of funny. You mentioned not saying a word to anyone until, like, you actually had the deer in your hand. So that's something that I'm really superstitious about myself.
Oh, it's the jinx of all jinxes. We've all seen it, you know.
Yeah, we've seen it, you know, online. Oh, I shot a buck tonight. I'm going to look for him. And immediately everyone's like, oh, you're never going to find it now.
Yeah.
And in my buck, it was the same way, because we keep a group text going, and someone texted any activity, and I had just shot the buck, and he made it out of sight, but I was certain that he was starting to wobble as he went over the crest of a hill, and that I heard him go down. And the only response I gave those guys was, I just saw a big one.
And you weren't lying. You did just see a big one.
And, you know, it was probably, an hour and a half later before I even texted them a picture, maybe 2 hours, because I sat in the tree for another hour just because I wanted to give that deer time. It was quartering away really hard. I don't remember how detailed we've got in the podcast about the shot that I put on the steer, but it was quartering away really hard, and it was a 40-yard shot. I knew exactly how far it was, 41 to be exact, and I was pretty confident that I hit right where I wanted to, but when you see that light of knock disappear right in front of the back cam of a deer, it's a little plays tricks with your mind, right? And so that was the cause for my silence and giving it more time, way more time than I usually do when I know that I made a perfect shot. But anyways, without dragging it out too long, it was, I'm the same way. Like, all I told them was I saw a big one, and when I texted pictures to him, someone said something along the lines of, is that one bigger than the one you saw earlier or something? And I said, no, that's the one. So, of course, I got some shit from my group of buddies about, wait a minute, you said you saw a big one, but you didn't say that you shot a big one. What's up with this? I'm not superstitious about a lot of things, but talking about a deer being down until you know it's down for sure is one of the things I will not do.
Yeah, I can't. Even when I text you, I think all I text you was like, holy F, dude. And said, what? And I said something about you have pictures, and Jack had taken them with my phone, so I already had them ready to go. But I was like, it's a worse jinx than when, like, Yahoo Sports will say a pitcher has a no-hitter going against a team going into the ninth inning. It's like, well, there goes that. Somebody's get a base hit here. I've seen it go wrong so many times. Like you, there's some things that I do every year before, like on every hunt, even as we were heading up opening weekend, as we were heading up this past weekend, like when I get in the truck and I'm going hunting, Bodies by Drowning Pool has to play. Like, that's just it's the start. We're going to make Bodies hit the floor. That's my good luck charm. But outside of that, like, my no-no, like, you don't say anything until you have your hands on it. I don't care if it's a deer, a turkey, a duck, a goose, a squirrel. Like, I don't say squat to anybody, because you never know what's going to happen. Like, it's so easy with Jack's deer. When I'm sitting there filming and I'm able to be zoomed in on it and ride on the deer and can kind of control everything, and he took the shot, I'm like, oh, dude, you just smashed that deer. Like, without even watching the footage back, I knew that he just drilled it. My deer, looking through the scope, 35 yards away, so not crazy long, but right at, or a few minutes after legal sunset, he comes walking through. I was watching through the scope. I don't know how it could have been a bad shot. It was one of those, he was a slow, steady walk, quartering away just a little bit, not super hard. So damn near broadside. I'm like, I don't know how I could have made a bad shot, but until we find this deer, I'm not getting excited about any. And Jack is like shaking. He's like, oh my God, Dad, you just shot such a big deer. I'm like, buddy, I don't know. We sat in the blind for probably 20, 25 minutes just to let everything chill out. He swore he heard it crash. I didn't. I was so in the moment, though, that I wouldn't have known anything. But we gave it time, got down, went to go track it, and the deer ran almost the exact same path that his deer had run. So as we're looking at blood, I'm like, but I kept asking him, is this your deer or is this my deer? Does that look fresh to you? And we're scanning all around trying to find right where it started. And finally, we both got down and started kind of sticking our fingers in some of the blood and found it fresh. And then after that, we went probably 10 yards and I can't remember if I told you or not, but it looked like somebody shot or punched a hole in a can of red spray paint and just chucked it down through the woods. I mean, it was just blood everywhere and a gruesome sight. But as a hunter, I just, like, when I get so excited, you know, I cuss all the time, but when I get really either excited or focused, like, I must turn into like a little church boy or something, because I just recall, maybe it was because Jack was filming me or something, but I would just over and over was repeating, holy schmoly. Like everywhere I would look and be like, oh my good, look at God, look at this blood trail, Jack. Holy schmoly. Like over and over and over. I was so happy once I saw that. And we talked about like, what does blood look like in hits? And I was showing Jack, I'm like, you see how this is, looks like it's almost a whipped blood. It's kind of like the foam on top of a coffee or something like that. I was like, this is a good sign. So we knew we were going to get him, but even still on the trail, blood everywhere. Until I touched that deer for myself, I'd text nobody. And I like at that point, that's when I gave Jack a big hug and a high five and everything's like, okay, now it's good. Now we can start talking about this as if it happened and not that it may have happened.
Yep, I've been there so many times where you know that you made a good shot, or you're just so sure you did, but yet you didn't hear the animal crash, or you didn't see it go down, and it's just this big uncertainty, and it's easy to let doubt creep in. And so many times where, you know, you find a little bit of a start of a blood trail, and you get moving along, and then, you know, there's just that moment where the blood trail tells you all that you need to know, and it's just such a huge relief. Like, you just know, yeah, okay, this is it. Like, I don't see him yet, but now I have no doubt. And you know, let's face it, the best thing is whenever you just see him go down about 25 yards away.
Yes. If they just dump, and he didn't go super far, like 60, 70 yards, but through the woods. Again, it's night. The only thing that saved him from going over this little section we call like the bluff, this super steep ridge that drops straight down into the creek. Like, it may not be 100 feet below, but it certainly looks 100 feet below. Was that he got tangled up, but seeing that blood trail was like immediately, and okay, this isn't going to be a super long night. We don't have a long track job. This deer didn't go far. Like, all right, shoo, because I'm sitting here thinking it's dinner. Jen just started dinner back at camp. I've got to get him back to camp. We haven't eaten in several hours. We probably ran out of most of the blind snacks. So seeing that, it's hard to describe the relief when you know that the sign is telling you very good things, even though you haven't seen the animal yet.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you had mentioned some of your hunting is changing, like the times. You're kind of going back to mornings and late afternoons. As far as areas that you are hunting, not necessarily types of terrain, like specific spots, are you hunting food? Are you set up near bedding cover? Like, is there anything that has changed with the transition other than the time you're sitting right now?
It is, because in fact, I just told myself after this evening's hunt that the stand that I was sitting in, it has really turned into a morning stand. Like, evening's not paying off for it anymore, and it's because it's a stand that's tucked back in on a point on where actually four ridges make an X, if that makes sense. And so it's all woods, and it's a terrain thing. And it's really demonstrated to me now, the last handful of hunts, that it needs to be reserved for deer coming back to those points to bed down. And it doesn't have anything to do with food. And frankly, I don't know where they're eating in that particular setting, because it's such big woods, but they're obviously not feeding around me. Now, take a whole different scenario over in Illinois where I'm hunting, for sure evening hunts, where we're kind of switching our focus and getting back to where we can see big fields and deer coming out to the field. And even this morning, we'll use Billy Wheeler as an example. I talked to him on the phone last night, and he was specifically headed for for what over there is big woods. It's just a patch of woods, of course, but it's what he calls it, the white oak woods. And he was specifically getting away from fields and trying to be where deer were going back into bed. So we're kind of getting less focused on travel corridors and more focused on where we think deer are going, specifically whether it's to bed or to food now.
Like, where do they actually want to spend some time? They're not just walking past, but they want to be in here and stay around here for some period of time.
Right, right. Now, in my urban spot, it's always proven to me that somewhere in that first week of December, I need to be back in those travel corridors and those pinch points, because bucks do start putting some miles on again that first week. Scrapes open up, and it's just like this little, of course, it's what everyone refers to as a second rut. It's like a little mini rut condensed until about a week. And I just think that it's more pronounced in that urban area because the ratio, sex ratio, is a little off kilter. And so there's a lot more does in those overpopulated areas that didn't get bred the first time around.
Right. It's funny you mentioned the scrapes, because as I was talking about moving some cameras around this past weekend, as we were getting ready to head home Sunday, and thinking about, you know, specifically targeting, waiting for some of those scrapes to open back up. And I hadn't really put it a whole lot of thought or put it together too much until you had just mentioned that, yeah, as I think about even our property, it seems like right there on the very end of November to, you know, like December 6th or 7th, I feel like there's this time where I start getting bucks hitting scrapes, showing up at scrapes. I mean, they've almost completely abandoned scrapes, at least the scrapes that I've got cameras on or near. Some of them have gone totally dormant. So that second cycle of estrus that hits does seem to be, at least for, you know, Missouri, maybe for our region, I don't know, might be a way to describe it. Seems like that's probably, you know, about a week maybe or so away, coming up pretty soon though.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, just for that reason alone, even though our cameras, just like yours, that we keep on scrapes, had really diminished in activities and pictures. We keep those cameras going, and that is our window into the world of the deer, our area, to know when is going to be the next best window of opportunity to catch a buck on its feet in the daylight. Because every year for the last, I'm going to say 4 to 5 years, those pictures on those scrapes have really pinpointed, okay, get your asses back out there as much as you can. And that's where the cellular cameras have really helped us, because 5 years ago, you know, we would go check cards every 3 or 4 days, and sometimes we'd be, you know, already 3 days in the hole because we didn't know what was going on. But now that we have the cellular cameras on the scrapes, like, we know in real time, and that information is so extremely valuable to us that I can't even put it into words.
Yeah, and I'd almost say that thinking about hunting, I mean, the first time you get into that seeking, the chasing aspects of the rut, pretty much anything but lockdown can suck, but the deer movement that you see there is really cool. I feel like if you can get a deer on his feet during daylight in that early December time frame, that deer is probably more killer. I feel like deer at that point are more on a pattern, even in their daytime movements and even through that secondary rut, than they are in early November.
I do agree with that. For at least the areas that I hunt, once we start getting those daytime pictures again of bucks, what it really seems like is it's more of the local bucks. And so a daytime pitcher on a property of a certain buck, like we will get repeated daytime pitchers of that same buck instead of just one or two.
You're not getting cruisers for sure. I don't
Feel like. And not only that, you know, there's been years in which we've seen the same buck, you know, maybe 3, 4, 5 times in that first week alone of December, you know. And so it's been really good for us. In fact, it was either last year or the year before. I think it was the year before last. That first week in December was far better for me in terms of seeing big bucks in daylight than the entire month of November. So that'll tell you how good it can be if you're just ready for it.
Yeah, I think just so many people give up. Either, you know, my situation where, well, I got, you know, some years I get a deer prior to gun season, and then I might get a deer during gun season. And now that Jack's hunting, he's 4 for 4 on seasons now. So could be a lot of people pack it up. They're tired by that point, especially if you've hit it as hard as, you know, we can at times during early to mid-November. I just feel like so many people give up, whether it's the cold, whether it's just kind of I'm done. Thanksgiving seems to be like the we're going to all hang it up. This is now the holiday season. We're going to spend our weekends not hunting or whatever it is. But I feel like so many people really give up once like Missouri's firearm season. So when this publishes will be the last day of Missouri season. I feel like so many people shut down, even though there's still muzzleloader, and obviously bow season goes on for another month and a half or so, almost 2 months. Maybe I don't wish more people would do it, but I think a lot of people are doing themselves a disservice by giving up thinking we're past the rut. There's no real way to get a chance at a good buck now unless I have the food source that it's going to be coming to as they transition back to more of their day-to-day bed, food, bed type routine.
Yeah, and I used to be right there with them. I used to just despise trying to hunt after the gun season was over. And it really was a factor of a few things. Going back 8, 9 years ago, the property, the farmland in Missouri that I was hunting, this is before I really switched to be more of a suburban hunter. It just was not very good after gun season. The deer really kind of moved off of the property I had permission on, and they were on the neighbor's property. And so I get it. You know, when you're a person that's got permission on a particular piece of property and the deer kind of aren't using it anymore, like it can be really tough, and there's just not much you can do about that. But I let that translate into my suburban hunting, and in my head, it's late season, it can't be any good anymore, the rut's over. And we just kind of started learning by paying attention to trail cams that we forgot were out there, and we'd go back and get the cameras and the cards later and looking through cards and realize that, wait a minute, like we missed some good hunting. And then, you know, just trying to get out, we like would be burnt out, we'd rest a little bit and think, heck, let's just get out a little bit. And all those little pieces of information piled up, and now like I'm ready to roll all the way through the season if I still have tags, just because I know it can be good if you just put a little thought into what's happening and a little legwork, some camera time, and all those little pieces of information, scouting, in other words. If you just a little more effort, it can be well worth hunting all the way up into January even.
Damn, man, you just took like my whole parting shot. I was going to talk about how now's the time to just stick with the grind, maybe cut out some of the all day sits, unless it's your only time. But yeah, that was like everything that I was going to wrap up with. So you just nailed it for me. I didn't even have to shoot my shot this week.
Well, there you go. I'll give a quick parting shot. it's really one that I probably used last week. I think I know that I've used it multiple times. You mentioned it briefly earlier and I'm sticking with this. Man, if you're out there deer hunting, whatever deer you want to shoot and you're happy with, go with it. Don't apologize. Be happy. Be proud. Trust me, the buck that I killed this year, there's a whole lot of deer hunters out there that would pass that buck because they're waiting for a giant. But yet, there's plenty of deer that I've passed up that lots of guys would be excited to shoot. It's all in your personal excitement. I just keep seeing, and I know you do too, over and over, people posted pictures and, well, he's not the biggest, or he's not a buck like some of you guys would shoot. Like,
or the, you stop. Got him with a gun and not even directed necessarily at me, but, and I'd have been, I would have loved to have gotten that buck with my bow, but it didn't remove or detract from my experience that I had a 308 in my hands and not my bow. So not even the shoot what makes you happy, shoot with whatever weapon makes you happy.
Of course. Like, it's probably a whole nother episode, but I mean, there's just getting to be so much holier than now. My way is the only way, and he's not old enough, needed more time, not big enough. Why'd you shoot that? Like, it's just deer hunting, people. It's supposed to be fun. And so whatever aspect of deer hunting is fun to you, like, go for it.
Do your thing. Yeah, nice parting shot. You want to wrap us up for the week, or you want me to close everything out?
Well, you've been pretty good at spitting out the email address, so I'm going to let you go ahead and wrap us up.
Yeah, so little secret. I jotted down all the important information to make sure that I didn't screw it up. So thank you all so much for tuning in for another episode. As always, if you have questions or ideas for show topics, if you have feedback about the show, keep the emails coming in. The email address is podcast@hotshotmanufacturing.com. You can also follow us on social media, being Facebook and Instagram, by searching Hotshot Archery. Also, be sure, we don't talk about them a ton on the show, but check out our entire line of releases, peep sights, other accessories. If you doubt their efficacy, you clearly aren't following us on social media. We haven't probably got through, we've still got about a third of the pictures that have come in that we haven't had an opportunity to get through yet. So check them out. HotshotMFG.com. If you want to check it out online, you can also find all the back episodes of the podcast on the website as well. So appreciate everybody's support and good luck for those out hunting and those who are preparing to step up to the target line. We'll talk again soon.